This is Edwin K. Morris, and you are about to embark on the next Pioneer Knowledge Services Because You Need to Know, a digital resource for you to listen to folks share their experience and knowledge around the field of knowledge management and nonprofit work. This program was made possible by sponsorship from SimCorp, a provider of industry-leading integrated investment management solutions. SimCorp offers difficult jobs for curious people.
Everyone, I'm Maggie Starkey, and I live in a small town in Southeast Ohio called Little Hocking. I work at Kraton Corporation. I am the knowledge management specialist there within the R&D organization. So I've actually worked there for 10 years. I've been in knowledge management for almost three. And I would have to say the last book that I read that I really enjoyed was Atomic Habits by James Clear. It's really great if you're wanting to live your life to the best and have really good lasting habits, that it's just a really great book to read to learn how to do that. Something that I can talk about for hours with is definitely my dog. So if anybody brings up dogs, I will show you the 5 million pictures in my phone of my dog, tell you all about how crazy she is, how lazy she is, and how much personality she has. Everyone says that she's just like her mother. She definitely has an attitude. So that's definitely me. And the best advice I actually have received was the day that I got hired at Kraton. So my dad actually worked at Kraton as well as my grandfather. They both retired from there now, but he actually left a note on my desk when I got hired that said, "Hard work and dedication always rewards." So that's something I still have, that paper in my office at home. And I look at that every once in a while, just as that quick reminder when I feel like giving up, just to persevere and keep going.
So it's interesting that you've got such a lineage at this place.
Yep.
What's the center of gravity that keeps driving these Starkeys over there? What is it?
Yeah, so it's a very small town, and the company, it was Shell. We were the first inventor of the styrenic block coke polymer in 1955, if you know what that is. So it's a very small town, like I said, and it's a very plant focused area. So a lot of manufacturing, and it was one of the bigger plants, still is the bigger plant in the area. I mean, if you don't have somebody that works at Kraton or Chemours, formerly DuPont, or Solvay, it's very rare. So that's why a lot of people work there.
Got it.
It's not a big city.
Yeah. You know, there's three main chunks of knowledge management, and it's people, process, and technology.
Without the people, you know, you don't have the knowledge to collect, essentially. but I really do enjoy working with the people that I have in our R&D organization. There's only 200 of us in R&D since we are a functional KM program right now. But it's just really great. I'm close with a lot of them. I'm friends even at other sites around the world I'm pretty close with. So it's just really great to work with all of them and get to know them more as well, too.
When you're talking knowledge and people managing it, what seems to be the biggest hurdle with an organization getting their people to share?
For us specifically, really, it's just taking the time. So we're a very lean organization where a lot of us are, I don't necessarily say overworked, but we definitely have a full plate. We do share knowledge, obviously, you know, when we work with people, but it's not in the context or as detailed maybe as what we'd like to have time for. So it's really been our focus here lately with why we started the KM program, was to really take a step back and really spend time, even if that meant potentially slowing down on other projects or maybe telling other departments, hey, we can't work with you on this project because we really need to focus on upskilling our newer employees so they can carry on that legacy. We have people in R&D that have been here for 30 plus years. We have a couple that's been in here for 40. It's just really important that we're learning and that our leadership is dead set and on board with, hey, we really, this is important to us. We need to take the time and find the best approach to really capture that knowledge and share it with other people.
I understand what you're saying. You got to create a gap for reflection to happen so people can absorb and understand and comprehend on a deeper level instead of moving on to the next and letting all that just evaporate. But how does that become ingrained in the process? You say you're a lean organization. I am sure that your processes are very detailed.
Yes, we do. All of our people are scientists or engineers or technicians. So we're obviously very detailed in R&D. We have a lot of processes, sometimes to the point it might be a little overwhelming for people because we have to document and process everything. It really helps just because the way our minds work typically in R&D is, you know, we're process driven. So if we add that into our process of let's have an after action review or let's have a look back after the project or at every stage in the impact process to learn from our mistakes, how we can do better. So we're slowly ingraining it into our processes. At first starting out, they were definitely outside our flow of work because we were just trying to get caught up on all the backlog. But now we're really starting to ingrain and look at different ways to transfer that knowledge that's part of our everyday work habits. After action reviews or look backs within projects, it's having mentoring sessions and have that part of somebody's job description eventually. It's really taking that time and ingraining it into our work.
So is all that your job to institute and make sure it happens? Is that what KM is responsible for? And I ask this because sometimes HR takes over some of this because it is a responsibility and or an expectation of what the job role is even about,
right?
So it's, is it that level of fidelity for you guys that it's HR's like all over this that, hey, knowledge is an asset, work it.
So right now it's definitely not that strong yet. It's mainly just because it is only in R&D currently right now, but we do work with our HR business partner a lot, with our IT, with project managers. So we do pull in other people. So the KM team is just myself right now, essentially, but I do liaise with those individuals because I'm not an expert on everything. So projects and impacts, that's not my expertise. I'm familiar, but I want to pull in project managers so they can help with that process, or HR when it comes to different people interactions. We just recently did a global onboarding interface to really have a structured, well-rounded introduction to Kraton R&D, essentially. So we worked a lot with HR and other business partners within R&D to make sure we had a broad basis covered. So it's not necessarily driven by one particular person. I'm just kind of, a lot of times, a project manager just because of my ownership and I like to be involved and take care of things.
How much is collaboration expressed as a operational need for your R&D folks? Because you've already kind of depicted that the process and the procedures is pretty heavy duty because you're doing a lot of things that need tracked and recorded and all that sort of thing, like scientists like to have, I guess.
Right.
But how much of the free, what I would say free range knowledge, or free range as in free range chicken, free range knowledge collaboration, how do you get some folks that are built for process, procedure, step-by-step checklist, boom, 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 to just having a conversation?
So it's actually really great in that aspect because people are always eager to collaborate and communicate with one another. And they always, when we do yearly engagement surveys, that's their thing. We want to collaborate more. We want to communicate more. At different sites, they do different, like in our Houston lab, they have a popcorn Friday to where they have popcorn and they just can have those water cooler conversations and collaborate. So we try to do different fun things. Their new thing that they love, I introduced this year, is knowledge cafes. So they absolutely love knowledge cafes, whether it be a particular problem that one team is trying to solve or just be a more generic, get to know each other. We had one group take their specific team results from their engagement survey, posed 4 questions, and we had a knowledge cafe of, hey, how can we solve these problems? So they're really taking those different activities and translating into the work benefits for them so they can be more collaborative and communicate better.
So I have to ask, is there anybody on the bean counter side saying, hey, we're paying these folks to sit around and have popcorn and talk and chat and stuff? Is anybody saying, what's the return on investment in all this time? Is anybody pushing that, or is it just absorbed? Right. The leadership says, move on. We're doing this. This is the way we're doing things.
Our leadership, our chief technology officer, she's really great. She's always on board with that type of stuff. She's very great with communication and collaboration. So we really haven't had that much of an issue of people saying that. It's always greatly supported to have those activities or even have happy hour or some different team events outside of work. So it's not mandatory, but I know whenever I go and visit Houston, they are always having those. They always invite me to them. So it's just a really great culture, essentially, of the way we work with the collaboration.
So you just nailed it. The definition or the key word, culture. When you were saying about the getting together and every time you're at the location, you're like part of everything going on. That in military framework is called camaraderie, right? It is the ability of the team to just be people.
Yes.
So many organizations do not put any focus whatsoever on people being people.
Right. And I will say, different locations, it is a little different just because the plant where I'm home based, it's a plant. So it's a lot larger. So it's a little harder to do that. But even there, we have a group. It's called KIRC, the Creighton Employee Recreation Club. So we have different events that we host for families, children, you know, the adults only, et cetera. So that is definitely one thing that we try to instill in our core is our culture and our families.
I want to offer you, Maggie, the opportunity to give anyone out there, any listener that has a need of addressing their work culture, what's your best advice to institute a stronger team or camaraderie collaboration effort?
Gosh, that's a hard one. So there's so many things, but really it's go to your leadership, go to somebody that you feel most comfortable with, kind of like a confidant, you know, that in that leadership level, or maybe it's not quite that high, but find somebody that's higher up to be on your side if you're not that person. Explain the importance and the value and really just go after it. You know, give examples, say, hey, can we just try this one thing, see what the feedback is, and just never give up. That's one thing. There's been times where I've just been so frustrated with different things because, you know, it's a company. The bottom line is to make money. So sometimes you can't do everything you want to do or something doesn't turn out like you think it would. But you just got to keep going and you just, you know, hard work and dedication never fails. So you just got to keep going.
What is the thing you would say don't ever do? Don't do this.
Let's see. I would have to say, try to force it. Don't have your one idea. Culture is very hard. It takes a very long time to change if you are trying to change it. You know, as great as everybody might think our culture is, just from what I've talked about, it's been a long haul, and we're still actively trying to make it a more knowledge sharing culture. But don't try to force it. You know, ask for feedback. Ask what people want to see, what they don't like, what they do like, issues they have. Go out and solve those problems or improve those issues. Don't just go in with a single mind of this is how it's going to be because it's not going
to
work.
So that gets right back to one of the things that we had talked about earlier was learning. And when you say that, it's like, don't be tone deaf to your people.
Yes.
Don't just box it up and ship it out just because that's the way you do things. You have to understand what your audience, what your consumer wants to participate with.
Yes.
If you're going to try to get them to learn, you don't want to beat them in the head with a brick and say, learn.
Right.
You want to engage them. So all these things you've talked about are providing engagement opportunities.
Yes. And I always take, I mean, granted, 200 people, it's not as hard to do, but I take the time and have, if I'm visiting the sites, I have conversations with teams, or when I'm not visiting, I'll just chat with a couple individuals. I have regular meetings with a few people on a monthly basis just to check in. Hey, how's it going? Get a pulse. It's all about knowledge management. You'll hear it a million times. It's all about the people. And to me, if I want the people on my side and have them do these different activities for knowledge sharing, et cetera, you got to win them over. You got to have that connection with them. And that's what I do a lot of my time with, is building those connections with the people that I'm there to serve. So they'll trust me into following me essentially into the path that we're going down.
How much time in your schedule do you dedicate to that? Do you have a slotted amount of time that you say every week I'm putting in X amount of time?
I don't have a dedicated time. It just kind of depends on what the workload is for the week and what's going on. Definitely, I make it a point when I'm visiting the sites. Primarily, all I do is meet with teams, meet with individuals, do different interactive activities, do a lunch and learn, just to have those one-on-one connections and those small group connections. We do a KM week where we do a different session every day. Everybody's invited. We usually try to have some swag or some giveaways stuff. So it's really just taking the time between that. And then I also, when I send out communications, it's not just an email or it's not just a Yammer post with text. I have Canva, you know, you make the flyers, you make it presentable. And that really makes the difference is when you put that extra time into it, people really resonate with it.
I like what you're saying. You're paying attention to the content and you're addressing the audience as a learner that needs to be interested enough to learn.
Yes. 100%.
That. So how do you get people to learn?
Yeah, that's a tough one because with every individual, it's always usually a little bit different. So you got to find how that works. Really, I just try to find different ways to give people an opportunity to do it what works best for them. If we have a meeting, we'll have a recording. Maybe we'll have a summary document or some type of written content. So if people would rather watch it or hear it versus read it, whatever it might be. So as far as in the work environment, we always try to find different ways as well as interactive, you know, whether it be a workshop, a knowledge cafe, other type of hands-on learning, one-on-one learning.
What you're saying is the key ingredient is to have more than one way.
Yep.
So think of it like a buffet.
Yes.
So instead of taking people to the breakfast place that only serves eggs and bacon, we're going to go to a buffet and you can flip and pick what you want. And as you know, you can engage the content as you feel drawn toward. And a lot of organizations don't do that.
Yeah. One thing that we do kind of informal interviews, some of our experts to really draw out that tacit knowledge. So they're usually virtual. So we record it through Teams. So we have that recording. Mm-hmm. We have somebody taking notes, usually have some type of PowerPoint slides or visuals, or we've even had some people draw on a whiteboard. People have 2 hours to watch the whole video. Maybe they don't. Maybe they want to just take up the Cliff Notes version with the notes. And that's really what we found to be helpful is you don't want to have too many options to where people feel overwhelmed. But if you have enough, a few different options where people can choose, that's usually what works best for us.
So the other end of this discussion, we've got learning on one side, but the other side is doing. You're not an academic structure that just, oh, learn, so you're just so brainy, it's great, you're so learned. No, we want you to do stuff. We want you to do it. Put it to action. How do you bring that in? I understand what you're saying. You build a whole methodology in which how you engage your personnel to be learners, but now how do you throw the switch? Okay, let's put the gas to this. Let's go. How are you going to put some action into this?
In that aspect, really, it's about repetition for us because a lot of this stuff is new for our people. It's just reminding them of, hey, this is out there, or hey, if you're doing this new process, why don't you grab a GoPro and video it or document it or pull somebody in with you. So as you're going through it, they can learn with you. So it's about changing that mindset of, hey, this is a good learning opportunity either for somebody in the future or even me in the future. So what do I need to do to be able to do it?
You're describing creating a creative culture.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying.
Yeah, right? Okay, so I would have to assume that that might be a challenge with a bunch of, my guess, non-creative type people, my estimate, of scientific type people,
right,
that they're more not as creative. I hate to say what I'm saying, but you know,
right,
to me, scientific people are less creative. I don't know that as a fact. It's just a guess.
Yeah.
But is that the rub? Is there a rub there with that?
A lot of times, yeah, there is a struggle just because they're so laser focused on the experiments,
right,
the projects, you know, whatever, yep, it might be. They're like, they'll tell me something and did. I'm like, oh, great. Did you think to record that meeting? Or, you know, did you pull this person into it? And they're like, oh, no, that would have been a good idea, right? I'm like, well, yeah, it would have. That's really where, and it's not perfect by any means, and everybody is learning, but they are open to that, to where there are a lot of people now. I mean, I've had a handful of people within the last couple of months send me an email and say, hey, we had this learning activity. Here's the video that I did. Can you upload it to the site so other people will have access to it? So they're doing a couple different onboarding, overviews of labs, recording processes. So it is slowly where people are thinking it on their own. It's not me getting involved or the leadership getting involved to say, hey, you need to make sure you do this. They're slowly starting to get that and think of it beforehand.
It's the old teach a guy to fish kind of thing, right?
Yes.
You're starting to feel a little excitement around seeing some things that are starting to sprout up around the place.
Yeah.
When you're talking about creating action or doing out of this process, is there a tracking method? Is there any way to show, or have you figured out a metric that says, okay, well, we did this GoPro video, and from that creative application the scientist put forth, three things jutted from that and made a dollar? You know what I mean? How do you track in success?
So that is something that I personally struggle with a little bit, because when I hear people say, we saved the company $5.2 billion because we enacted this KM activity, I'm thinking, okay, you might be a fool of crap a little bit. But there's a lot of other factors and estimates and guesstimates even that go into that. We are trying to get to that point to some degree, yes. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to be artificial in our metrics. So
give the folks listening what you're thinking artificial is. I think I have an idea.
So my perfect example is when people say, you know, they save the company billions or millions of dollars. And then you ask the question, okay, great. Can you show me and walk me through how you did that? And they're like, well, we took the average salary for our entire company and we multiplied it by this and divided it by that. And then this is how we got it. And I'm like, that just doesn't really work for me. I'm like, okay.
Very circumstantial at best.
Right. I focus more on, and I'm trying to get, because, you know, with R&D, with scientists, they're very analytical minded. Sometimes they don't want to see the qualitative type metrics. They don't want to see a testimonial from somebody where it just completely changed their mind when they watched a couple of videos of a new process or an expert that's been here for 30 years and they've been here for 2 months. We're starting to see that. And I try to capture those success stories. We do a yearly KM survey to get that feedback. But we also do quantitative metrics as well. But they're not, we save the company X dollars.
Yeah.
We're not established enough yet for that. And I'm still on the struggle bus with believing it a little bit. So
I think the metric thing is something that challenges a lot, because it's a bit in that gray matter of connections, people, motivations, aspirations, ideas, conversations, just a lot of that stuff that's in the ether, so to speak, that is a bit tough to track. When I was thinking about kind of a misplaced marker, when they start saying how many clicks this article got, or how many thumbs up this article got, or this answer, you know, it's like, a lot of that stuff can be gamed, and it's not really it is a measure, but is it the best measure?
Right.
What I think a lot of organizations could really explode on is if we could find a way, and AI is probably going to do this, is that, so say from your GoPro video from Scientist One that was posted, and from the content and the learning that was gained from someone watching or absorbing that content, it then triggered X, and which led to X, which created this. Those procedural step metrics that show none of the following could have happened, none of this downstream action could have happened unless this first juncture was created.
Right.
And I think that's the beauty, right? Because that to me shows more impact of conversation, of sharing, of collaboration, of all those things that people sometimes are good at and sometimes are not good at. But in a KM world, you need to have that as your flag staff going forward, that's what you want. You want a community of shared information and knowledge to be able to create better opportunities, better decision making, better whatever your organization's mission's all about.
Exactly. To me, even clicks on a document, or, you know, whatever it might be, that doesn't tell you if that document helped that person looking at it, or did they just click it and that's the end of it. We actually do with our knowledge transfer series that we do like a pre-assessment of, okay, just some generic questions. How comfortable do you feel operating this piece of equipment on your own, et cetera? Yeah. And then at the end, we retake it just to see what that difference is. Did they gain that knowledge? Do they feel more comfort running that piece of equipment, whatever it might be? So we can gauge how much knowledge they learned, how effective was the content, you know, and that knowledge transfer. So we're slowly getting there.
I like what you just said, because you're measuring confidence level.
Yes.
In your example, that's all I heard was that's confidence. That's the ability to do something, right? Regardless of your skill, you could have zero skill, but if you've just watched a how-to video and you're like, well, I can do that. Do you have the skill? No, you have zero skill, but you can follow directions. Oh, okay, I can do that. But with that practice, you build better confidence and abilities going forward. It just snowballs.
Exactly. You know, in our company, we're dealing with chemicals. So granted, we have a lot of measures in place to prevent things from happening, but still sometimes I always joke, my previous boss always wanting me to get out in the field in the units and run some of the equipment. And I'm like, no, you don't want this place to blow up. You don't want me in charge. Yeah. The fear is real. In 93, we did have an explosion at our plant. So that was a long time ago. We have better process measures in place now to prevent stuff like that. But it still can happen. Accidents can still happen. Nothing is foolproof. That fear level, it's not like you're doing something generic. It's heavy chemicals. It's that can really cause damage to you and others around you.
What would be your best prescription for an organization to track how their folks benefit from sharing knowledge?
Yeah.
Granted, you just gave some interesting concepts, but what,
right,
you know, think of any nonprofit or school or any organization out there that you've ever worked around or with or volunteered with. How would you tell that young organizational leader to say, hey, look, do this?
I mean, really, I would say to focus on the qualitative metrics. So obviously those aren't as attractive because you're not seeing numbers, you're not seeing the data. But in my opinion...
So are you saying you cannot get numbers from qualitative data? Or is that what you're saying?
You can. I mean, it can be translated somewhat, but really, to me, those are more impactful.
It is just mind-boggling to me that people can dismiss qualitative data capture like it's not as important.
I agree 100%. We do a lot of success stories, a lot of testimonials from the people in the front line, not just the people that are learning the knowledge, but the people, our experts that are giving that knowledge of, hey, was this a successful way to do it? Do you have a better way to do it? Because the qualitative metrics is where you can learn and continuously improve. It'll give you an idea and a direction of where you need to go or where you should go if you're capturing the right qualitative data, whether it be the success stories, the pre-assessment and the post-assessments, your rating of how much knowledge people felt like they learned after a certain period of time, whatever it might be. So that's what we really try to focus on, and then turning that into how can we improve for the next time.
Let's go back to the tacit knowledge. And that is something that is, in my mind, qualitative. It is something that is in someone's brain that may not even be created yet. So this is knowledge that is just waiting to be tapped, but it may not be conscious. There is no way other than qualitative methodology or questioning or engagement in a language-based kind of perception to extract or create that knowledge. It all comes down until we're all digitized and digital copies of ourselves are doing all the work and working 24/7 and no issues and no sick days.
Right.
Until that day, and we're still talking to people, that's always going to be a problem or an opportunity. And what you're talking about is setting the cultural environment in order to propagate as much conversation, as much learning as can be had.
Yes.
That's what I'm hearing you guys are doing.
And last year, for example, we did have a few good qualitative metrics that we did. So we did how many hours and how many people that tacit knowledge was transferred to. So we had specific identified experts that we wanted to transfer knowledge from to people because they were getting ready to retire. So we captured how many hours did these people spend sharing their knowledge with others? How many other people directly did it touch? Granted, we have all of that information captured. Yeah. So it's in our databases for people to view it later, but immediately that one-to-one direct transfer, how many people did that touch? And that's what is very important, is that one-to-one connection. Granted, the documents that we captured will be beneficial too, but that transfer that gets passed down is what really makes a big difference, at least within our R&D organization.
Now, the challenge of that, the one-to-one, if folks don't understand what she's saying, the one-to-one is a transitional piece where it's transactional. It's a capture, share kind of metric. And ideally, the organization or most knowledge management practitioners want to evaluate and generate one-to-many situation versus one-to-one, because the cost ratio of doing one-to-one, 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 one-to-one versus one to many multiplies and extrapolates a lot. That's my mathematical term, right? I mean, it just, that creates the avalanche of opportunity when you can pull that tacit, pull that knowledge, share it amongst all or broader folk versus, so think of it like this. Are we going to have a Slack conversation about a topic, or are you going to call me on the telephone and just talk to me?
Right.
Now, that example is what I want to show the folks, is that if it's in a opportunity to share and be seen and findable and usable by many, that grows legs automatically to the value of that knowledge. Once it's in a pipeline between two people, it's a dead end. It is absolutely a dead end. I want to drive that home so people get this, is that that old style, and that's a mentorship relationship, right? That is where you've got somebody and you're sharing information and knowledge and experience direct. That's great. It's useful, but it's limited because now you got to do it again with the next guy or gal.
Right.
It's a chain link issue that is a problem. Always think of going one to many, and it will multiply your benefit and reduce your costs automatically.
Exactly. And we tried to keep, when we were doing those smaller groups, that it really was the direct relation. So yes, it's still transferring to many people, but at the same time, it's small enough to where people have time to feel like they have dedicated, essentially, time where they can ask their questions, their burning questions they've had in their mind, or maybe they would be too afraid to ask because they might sound dumb, you know, with a broader group. So with those specific activities that we did, usually we didn't have any more than 10 people. It's not like we were cutting people off that needed to be involved. Right. That's just how our teams worked. But it really was effective for people to have those small group interactions to learn and collaborate with one another.
That's a sweet spot to have, that small group or a kind of an intimate gathering, because there is a safety factor in that to some degree.
Exactly.
Versus being in a crowd of 500 and like, oh, I'm not saying a word. I'm not, here again, that confidence level of being a member of the collaborative sharing unit has to be an environmental factor the organization sponsors and says, hey, come on, this is a safe, or not just say it, make it a safe environment to where, it's allow their people to be people.
100%.
All right. I hear the drums are beating. So what's Maggie's definition of knowledge management?
Oh gosh, I should have prepared for that one a little better. That's a tough one. There's so many definitions out there, but really to me, when somebody asks, you know, oh, hey, what are you doing? And I say a knowledge management specialist, they're like, what the heck is knowledge management? And the way I put it is, if somebody leaves the company, if somebody retires, that knowledge usually goes with them. So really, my focus is to try to capture that knowledge and make sure that it can be shared with other individuals so we don't lose that knowledge. It's putting better processes in place just to really make sure we're not losing knowledge that can really cost the company potentially millions of dollars, depending on what knowledge walks out the door or walks to another department or whatever it might be.
So you're basically hinging the concept as a organizational resource that needs managed.
Yes.
And what you brought up is a, for instance, of why you've talked about money walking out the door, but I want to go back to your actual environment, which is got a pretty heavy safety kind of feel to it. So protections of property and humans is probably just as much as making money or saving
money. Right, 100%. And, you know, with our culture, safety is our number one thing. So it's even more than the bottom line or the bottom dollar is we want our employees to come to work safe and go home safe as well. So
in your environment, is the bumper sticker knowledge management makes you safer?
That could be a good one. I like it. I like it.
Well, thank you, Maggie. You're one of the few people that I've talked to that come from a scientific formulated organization. It sounds like you're on a great glide path to progress by the sounds of it. And I would love to have you back.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, it's funny because my disc profile, actually, I'm a heavy, the S and the C, which is more the analytical and the research. So when people see that and they see the role, like we were talking, I'm not an extrovert by any means, but people are like, there's no way, I don't believe it. And I'm like, once you find your thing, it just kind of naturally happens. And we're lucky enough that people can be versatile. They have that analytical mind, but they also can be creative as well. So.
Creative. That's the way, I think. All right, my friend. Well, we'll see you around the KM campfire.
Yes, that sounds great. Thank you.
This program was made possible by sponsorship from SimCorp, a provider of industry-leading integrated investment management solutions. SimCorp offers difficult jobs for curious people.
Thank you for listening to Because You Need to Know, the Reference Podcast in Knowledge Management. My name is Sony Toneme. As an art administrator, Because You Need to Know has been my go-to podcast and has helped me hone my management skills. Please consider sponsoring the podcast with your business.